from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Writer and photographer Lisa Hamilton says the lack of direct contact between urban and rural Californians makes it feel as though California is made up of two wholly separate states. In a new project titled Real Rural, Hamilton and her partners introduce California's unseen rural population to their urban neighbors through photography, interviews, and audio conversations. She'll join us along with John Christensen, who's executive director of the Bill Lane Center for the American West at Stanford. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. Lisa Hamilton is on a campaign to see to it that Californians become more widely acquainted with their neighbors, their rural neighbors, that is. She traveled 10,000 miles around the state to places the great majority of us have never heard of, places with names like Surprise Valley, California, and Lost Hills, California, and Mecca, California. We want to discuss her project, Real Rural, in this hour. And we also are joined in studio for the hour by John Christensen, who is executive director of the Bill Lane Center for the American West at Stanford University. And Lisa Hamilton is a photojournalist. Let me welcome both of you. Thanks, Michael. Say hello to our listeners.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you both here. Lisa, let me begin with you. Let's talk about the genesis of this project. How did it begin?
Well, it began with a grant from the Creative Work Fund, which is a project of the Elise and Walter Haas Fund. They fund artists to work with nonprofits to use art to address those nonprofits' issues. As a writer and a photographer, I've been working on food and agriculture and rural issues for 15 years. So this is a natural topic for me.
It was going to be agribusiness and health, and you kind of went through a metamorphosis, didn't you?
Well, it was, I guess, a long metamorphosis that began with a book that I wrote a couple of years ago called Deeply Rooted, Unconventional Farmers in the Age of Agribusiness. And it told the stories of three farmers and ranchers from around the country, East Texas, and North Dakota. And after writing that book, I came away with this really strong feeling that one of the keys to addressing the broken food system that we have is reintroducing the human element, multiplying exponentially the number of people who are involved with agriculture, because there are these contributions that only humans can make, things like history, sensitivity, caring about a place.
And we need more farmers, too.
Certainly.
You're talking about for food production, generally.
Yeah. But so I came away from that project feeling like what I needed to start doing was talking not about the farmers themselves, but about the rural communities that support them. Because you can't grow the population of people involved in agriculture without having strong rural communities. So that's what brought me to this project.
You want to know the people. I mean, this is photojournalistic work with interviews and so forth, which exposes us to people as individuals. I think you used the description of people you meet in the supermarket, not necessarily big agribusiness figures or the most eccentric people you could find or offbeat people you could find, but regular people. And I suppose underlying this is your desire to sort of say, country mice meet the city mice and vice versa.
In a way. There's this great divide between rural California and urban California. As I've said several times now, there often feels like we have two totally different states within California. And my idea was to reintroduce rural people and communities to people in the cities. And, I say rural people and communities, not rural issues, because this project is specifically not about politics. It's not about all these things that divide us. It's about lives and stories. That's how we're able to connect with people who feel so far away.
Ian Forrester said it best, only connect. He was talking, of course, about India and England. But John Christensen, why is this important from your perspective? Because I guess it does involve knowing each other's histories and what we're about and how we comport ourselves, rural lives versus country lives. Why is it important to the people who live in San Francisco to know about the people out there in the hinterland?
Well, we share a state. I think it would be good for us to get to know each other better. And, you know, the great literary critic Raymond Williams in his book, The Country and the City, said, you know, that you can't really understand one without the other.
Well, I'm delighted to hear the name Raymond Williams because somebody I admired a great deal. I haven't heard the name in many, many years. But you've kind of supplied by your own characterization the pied-à-terre for this project.
Well, we have, and also the group Roots of Change, which works on agricultural issues here in California. And, you know, when Lisa brought this project to us, I knew of Lisa's work and really admired it and was just so taken by the idea of bringing these faces and stories into BART trains in particular.
As you mentioned, you're going to be part of public transportation, right?
That's right. There are eight photographs, six portraits, two landscapes with short, evocative quotations that I think as people, you know, traveling the trains, you know, beginning yesterday, you know, look up from their iPads or their Kindles and at the urban landscape going by and see these faces looking back at them that they want to know more about. And that just, you know, that just took me right away. And I said, you know, whatever we can do to support that, I mean, to bring those rural lives into the hearts and minds of urban California.
Not only on BART, you can be in Los Angeles public transit too, Lisa?
Yeah, that's the next stage of the project. Right now we're launching the website, which is sort of has a complete storytelling experience with written stories, photographs, and audio, I think some of which we may hear later, and the BART campaign currently, which I think of more as sort of short stories. No end to those stories. They're not complete. They're meant to sort of grab you with this single photograph and this single line to sort of jump you out of your seat and into these people's lives for a moment. But later in the year, we'll have an exhibition of photographs at the California Historical Society. These contemporary photographs, images of rural California paired with photographs from their extensive archives, and then also a campaign on billboards in L.A. and Sacramento, which will be like the BART campaign.
Lisa Hamilton Gett is a writer and photographer, and Real Rural is her project. It's a project that aims to bring California's rural life to the urban public. Photos and quotes from the Real Rural Project, by the way, are currently being featured on BART trains. And there's something also that it seems to me from what I've read you want to communicate. I know you see yourself as a traveler and a witness to, quote, John Updike, but also bringing people to a recognition of a way of life, a way of life that is not as fast-paced, that is slowed down, that in some ways is even ritualistic, particularly for the farmer.
It's interesting you bring up the idea of the traveler and the witness. There's been something really interesting through this project. I won't tell the whole deep story, but I wrote the grant while I was pregnant and began the traveling, these 10,000 miles of traveling, when my daughter was 6 months old. And she came with me through this whole project. You know, I haven't spent a night away from her. And she really changed the way that I photograph for this project in particular.
Because you began to see things through newer eyes?
Or? Well, no, it's not quite that. Not quite that romantic, I guess. It was more the logistics of having an infant with you changed things. While I was writing the grant, I had this image of me just sort of strapping her on my side or on my back, and camera over the other shoulder. We just go, and anyone who has a child knows that that's not exactly the way it works, unless you're superwoman. And so it changed things. It slowed me down. And, I've talked about that wonderful idea that came from an obituary from John Updike about being a traveler and a witness. The traveler is the one who wanders and wants to see everything there is to see. And that's the way I've always been as a photographer. As a writer, I've always been a witness, the person who's willing to sit there in the combine for 4 hours and go around in circles sort of endlessly and stay there long enough to see things in a new way. Well, having my daughter in tow made it so that I couldn't just wander as a photographer. I had to focus a lot more.
It could be pretty boring, though. I mean, from most people's perspectives, it is boring. It's like the old Johnny Carson joke about nothing to do in a town. You have to watch the chicken go around the rotisserie, you know, in the window.
Well, it allowed me to really focus in on my subjects in a way that I hadn't before. I've been much more of a landscape photographer in the past, and this challenged me to focus in on the people and their stories and photograph them in a way that reflected those stories.
As you said, we're going to hear from some of these people in just a moment. A lot of poverty in rural California, isn't there?
Yeah, it was really surprising to me as I explored the state, going to places I had never been and also to places that I had been. But doing this in a really concentrated way, I was struck over and over again by the extent of poverty that exists in rural California. It's something that is discussed to some extent in social justice circles, but beyond that, you know, the greater public really isn't aware of it.
Is there also a divide politically, is it like red state, blue state, between rural and urban California?
Without a doubt. Yeah, there were when I introduced myself to people, often they jumped on the sort of political side of things. What they wanted to talk about was Sacramento and too much government and so on. And it took a while in some cases for me to push beyond the conversation about politics and to make it clear that what I really wanted to talk about were just people's lives. And once we got there, that's when the conversation got good.
You had to build up a lot of trust, I'm sure, to do that. John Christensen, let's talk about rural America a little bit historically with you. You're our historian in residence here. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt, we go all the way back to some of his concerns, don't we?
Well, that's right. I mean, in the early 20th century, when the United States was going through this grand demographic transition that found most of the population living in cities, there was a great concern about what was happening with rural life and whether rural communities would become backwaters, left behind by, and Teddy Roosevelt set up a Country Life Commission to investigate the deficiencies of rural America and correct them. And you can imagine the response from rural communities to that kind of condescension. It's the same thing that we see today.
We see a lot of kind. People talk about Hicks, and there is a good deal of condescension toward rural America here in California, and people who live out in the sticks. I mean, some of it has to do with that political conservatism that many associate them with that we were just talking about.
Yeah, but it's also, it's deeply cultural. I've many of my friends, students who have grown up in rural America feel that at Stanford University and in our other great universities that, modernity has tended to see the rural areas as having been left behind by history. And I think that, I see a great part of our project at the Bill Lane Center for the American West to provide a home for that kind of knowledge, that kind of experience. It's as modern as the city.
And a man who is often cited as being so right about so many things where nature is concerned, John Muir, may have been wrong on the binary between the rural and the urban, from your perspective?
Well, I think John Muir sort of set up the California that we live in, which is a California divided between, urban California, the productive rural landscape of agriculture, ranching, and mining, and the wilderness cathedrals of pure nature. I think we're still living in that world, but it's rapidly changing. I think where we see much more of a continuum now between the urban and the suburban, and out to the rural, and out to wilderness, and where we see the connections going, moving back and forth. And I hope that that's what this project can be part of is enriching that conversation.
project intends to bring us regular folk. I mean, not necessarily Diane Arbus type of photographs, but people who are a part of the rural landscape and who are maybe in many ways a lot like you and me. And I think that sort of expresses a good deal of your attention, doesn't it, Lisa, mm-hmm. to see the universality here and to see the connectedness and maybe even the mirroring that can go on with rural and urban folks. I thought we'd get a little taste of, because this is all done, a lot of it with not only photographs and writing, but audio. Dennis Lenardi is the first person we're going to hear from here. We're going to hear from some rural folk. He's from Ferndale, and he says he really likes living in an area where people know and help each other. And in this interview excerpt, he described what happened when an earthquake hit.
Folks helped each other turn their gas off, patch water leaks, brought front-end loaders in from the farm to scoop up stuff out of Main Street so people can drive. We just took care of stuff. You did it. You didn't wait for someone to do it for you. And it's that can-do attitude that just, I think, a lot of times is lost in America because we're waiting for someone or something to do it. And we haven't lost that yet. When folks, in the wintertime, somebody knows that you need a little bit of firewood because for whatever reason, you don't have any. Sometimes it just appears. We had a fella had kind of a dairy tragedy. His cows got into something that they shouldn't have in pasture environment. Lost a bunch of cows. And one Sunday afternoon when he took the afternoon off because he'd been working for weeks on end, mysteriously a whole bunch of cows from the neighbors showed up. And those are the little things that you never see, the little things that make a difference, the little things that make a community special and makes what I do special.
Dennis Lenardi, a voice from rural California, in fact from Ferndale, and I suppose it goes without saying that there's a lot of demeaning, as we've been saying, of rural folk, jukes and kallikaks and all those kind of jokes, but also a lot of sentimentalizing and a lot of maybe even romanticizing, just a country boy and girl type of stuff. There we hear somebody talking about, I suppose, what is one of the great virtues of what you discovered, Lisa Hamilton, and that is the sense of community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ferndale is a special place in that way. It's the last remaining dairy community in California, you know, a place that's defined economically and culturally by dairy farming. That used to be true of many communities up and down the North Coast and into the Central Valley. That's changed over the years, but because of geography and ecology, I guess Ferndale has it largely because it's in a floodplain, but also because it's so far away from everything, it's been able to stay a dairy area. And not just that, a pasture dairy community. So that means there are many more farms than they would be, and then there would be in the sort of different conditions in the Central Valley where the majority of dairy happens in California. It means many farm families, many employees, and a community that's full of people, and also a landscape that's full of people. If you think about the agricultural landscapes that we're most accustomed to in the Central Valley, you know, driving up and down I-5, you rarely see people unless there's a harvest crew out there.
But he was talking about how people come together in a crisis like an earthquake and how people are symbiotic with one another. Of course, you often hear the same thing about a crisis that happens, you know, all these sort of archetypical stories about New York apartment building where people don't even know each other or see each other, and then suddenly the lights go out or, you know, mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. happens and everybody suddenly is talking to everybody else and they're meeting their neighbors for the first time. But there's a more of a sense of solidly being rooted in these communities that we're talking about. I think mm-hmm. that comes. In fact, I don't want to make it seem like all these stories you're telling are just of ordinary folk. I mean, you have some pretty unusual stories, too. A 9-year-old boxer, a pot grower. Mm-hmm. it's a whole array. But let's hear another one. This is somebody named Mauricio Espinoza, and he was working in agriculture for most of his life. And he says because of that, he knows how to do a lot of things.
I know a little bit of everything. Except, the only thing I don't know is how to have a baby. That's it. I mean, other than that, I can drive a tractor, I can apply pesticides, I can apply herbicides, chemicals, and how to operate the drip systems, and any kind of irrigation, any kind of tractor, except airplanes.
Airplanes and babies.
Airplanes and babies, yeah.
Did you ever think about or want to do something other than farming?
If I don't do farming, if this is my life, farming. If I don't do farming, I'm dead. There's the only way I can quit farming, when God takes me to him.
Well, I think, John Chris, it's safe to say that many farmers are like Mauricio, I mean, in having to learn a great range of jacks of all trade type of stuff.
Yeah, and there's another interview among those 20 stories with Chuck Pritchard, who talks about the art of agriculture. And knowing the land, knowing the animals, the crops, the plants, the birds from living and working on the land. And you know, I listened to these 20 stories and that are on the website that Lisa has put together, realrural.org, and found, I mean, that there are these incredibly individual stories, that these are individuals that we listen to and hear, you know, on their own terms. But there really is a current, a pattern of these are moral stories as well, about
almost like little parables,
huh? You know, about land, about animals, about family, mm-hmm. about community, about generations. And in every single one of them, you also hear this passion for the life that they are living in rural California.
We're talking about Real Rural, and you can go certainly to Lisa Hamilton's website or our website. We have some material on our website as well. But you can also join us in conversation. I'd like to invite you to do that. If you have some thoughts about rural California, if you have been to places of rural California that remain memorable to you or met people in rural California, and what about the distinction between, well, the two Californians, some might say? I mean, is it never the twain shall meet, or is it perhaps that we do have common ground because the common ground is the state that we live in, the Golden State? I'd like to hear your thoughts and certainly any questions you might have. You can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your calls. 866-733-6786. You can also send emails to us, our email address, forum@kqed.org. Or post any questions or comments you may have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment, and you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page. We're talking with Lee Hamilton, writer, photographer, photojournalist, who brings us the project Real Rural, which you can now see on BART, by the way. If you took BART this morning, you will see some of these photographs that we're talking about here, and they're being featured on the BART trains. John Christensen is also here with us, executive director of the Bill Lane Center for the American West at Stanford University, and exploring the whole world, which is not often explored, of rural America, and interested in having your input into this. Do we have time for another cut? No, I don't believe we do, but we'll hear one more when we come back. This is also a question about the lack of direct contact between urban and rural Californians. It makes us feel as though there really are a couple of separate states, and Real Rural really tries to introduce California's unseen rural populations to you, the urban neighbors, although there are people listening to us in the rural sections who may want to join this conversation as well. Introduced through photography, interviews, conversations. We'll hear from you when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasn. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about rural California, which may indeed be like a separate part of the state, maybe even like a different planet in some ways from those living in urban California. Certainly the pathways, the mores, so many of the, well, call them folkways that are characteristic of living in rural California, and particularly agricultural and farming communities, are a great deal different than living here in cosmopolitan San Francisco. But Lisa Hamilton set out in her project Real Rural to show some of the similarities and universalities, and I think she's certainly accomplished that. She wants also those of you who live in the urban communities to know more about those who live in the rural communities and what kind of lives they live. And you can join us if you have some thoughts about the differences or if you have some questions, and particularly if you come from a part of rural California or know a part of rural California and want to talk about some of those differences or similarities. Our toll-free number, again, is 866-733-6786, and you can join the program and are welcome to do so. You can also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or you can join us by going to our Facebook page. Let's go to a caller up in Incline Village. Leslie, you're on. Hi.
Hi. I have a comment about your characterization of rural people as kind of bumpkins. I recently came back from
I'm sorry, I have to correct you. I didn't characterize them that way. Characterized that way, I believe, yes.
Yes, but you're repeating it. So I think, I just want to tell you of a...
Please don't put it on me. That's all I'm asking you. Yeah, go ahead.
You're a little defensive, Michael. But anyway, we currently live in Incline, but we have lived all over the state and overseas. We are basically urban people, but we have gotten into farming, and we had to go to Riverside to go to the orange research station because we have bought an orange ranch. And my experience in looking for a distributor for our oranges is they are incredibly sophisticated. From the farmer to the distributor, the farmers are incredibly knowledgeable about what it takes, and not just chemicals. They're versed across the spectrum, which is not true of a lot of people. And also, I met a farmer who was bringing his family into his business in a very sophisticated way. He knew he would get into issues if he brought too many of his family members in. So he went to therapy before he brought his son in to make sure that everything was clear. And he continues to do that with all his family members. I find that much more sophisticated than what happens often in urban centers.
Well, there are many people who presumably go into farming who come from urban areas who are sophisticated to begin with. But look, with the Internet and with television and with all the ways of getting information nowadays, one would expect some sophistication from many of the people who live in the rural areas. Did you find that, Lisa Hamilton?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's actually what this project is all about. Real Rural is telling stories that challenge the assumptions that we have about the people and the communities that exist in rural places, in this case specifically California. If you look at the stories that I've told, they are archetypes in some sense, a cowboy poet and farm workers, even in one case a professional bull rider. But my hope is that in all cases, the people who you meet are not at all who you would expect. You hear Linda Hussa, a supposed cowboy poet from up in Modoc County, reading really just a haunting poem, no rhymes there, with just exquisite poise. And you don't need to hear more than just her poem to know that there is incredible depth there.
I also like the fact that the bull rider had his wife chiming in the background about how she was more concerned about his driving 80 miles an hour than riding on those bulls.
Or you have John Diener, who's one of the most sophisticated farmers in California at Five Points, but has chosen to live in this community mm-hmm. where he's made his mm-hmm. life and livelihood. And I also like that this quote from Lee Harris. Who says, I can always leave and go to the city. Can't bring the city here, though. It's not like that. So rural people, they cannot avoid and they don't avoid the metropolitan culture, urbanity. That's part of what they know. But they know something else that many of us who live in urban areas don't know.
Mm-hmm. Here's a listener, Ward, who writes, I've lived in rural communities in Mendocino and Humboldt counties. And one of the characteristics I think you should mention is that these are largely homogeneously white communities. The people have very little contact with non-whites, except maybe Hispanics. I was often appalled by the racism against blacks and Asians.
I mean, I think it depends where you go. I think it's true that a lot of rural communities are homogenous. I don't think it's true that rural communities are largely white communities. That may be true to some extent in...
Well, you said except Hispanics, yeah.
Oh, except Hispanics. Well, yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's a story here from a community, Fairmead in Madera County, right there along Highway 99, deep in the vegetable and fruit crop area. It's an African-American community and has a really different history from, I think, what we would assume of, you know, those homogenous white communities. I think, I mean, certainly there's racism in rural communities. There's plenty of racism in urban communities. But if you look a little deeper, you'll find that, I don't know, it's maybe
what
not
about
as
the
homogenization
that that caller brings to, or that listener brings to our attention, that the communities are pretty homogenous?
I mean, I think if you look at the voices and the faces, you know, on the Real Rural .org website, I mean, it's hard to come away with that thinking that rural California is homogenous in any ways. You know, you've got Michael Preston from the Winnem and Wintu tribe in Shasta County, Lee Harris, African American, you know, certainly, you know, Martin and Guadalupe Diaz, you know, so you see that diversity.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, I will concede that the emailer has a point that a lot of communities are traditionally homogenous. That's something that's interesting about the story of John Diener, the very sophisticated, very successful farmer out in the western San Joaquin Valley. He's made a point of staying in his community. Most, you know, successful farmers sort of leave and move to Fresno and farm, you know, farm by commuting, and leave the communities out in the valley largely to the people who work on the farms, the farm workers. He's made a choice to not do that.
That listener was talking about up in Humboldt County and Mendocino, and we've got a caller from up there. So let's get you on the air here with us. Wolfgang from the Russian River. Hi.
Yeah, I'd like to, excuse me, I first of all, after your last comment there, I do think it's mostly white that I see in rural communities with Latin people coming in to do some work, but mostly white. I'd like to comment on the marijuana cultivation that seems to be happening all over rural communities in California. We have property up here in Nevada City and here in Russian River. And when we try to rent our property up in Nevada City, we almost cannot find anyone who doesn't want to raise marijuana. And not that we're against it, and we actually think it should be legalized and treated like any other crop. But there's a lot of problems that come with it because it's not really regulated or supported, or it's just the Wild West, and so we're having to evict another tenant, and it's really a problem, and I think it's because of the economy, and it just seems like it's the only thing that rural people can count on these days to keep their mortgages and to buy their food. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, we thank you for the call. Well, Lisa, you have this portrait. Charlie Custer, isn't that his name? Pot grower?
Yeah, it was interesting. I wanted to talk about the marijuana industry in this project because it is such a major part of the economy in certain parts of rural California. For obvious reasons, it was difficult to find a pot grower who wanted to be photographed and quoted and audio recorded. But Charlie Custer was a very interesting character within that whole industry. He's leading a group called the Tea House Collective, which is a medicinal marijuana marketing cooperative. And their mission...
It's not Custer's last stand, is
no,
it?
No, let's hope not. His mission and the group's mission is to bring a sense of values and morality back to the industry of marijuana, where they really feel like it began back, you know, 30, 40 years ago as something that was part of a larger lifestyle, a larger alternative lifestyle that was really based in, you know, making life about your values, about ecology and about sort of alternative economies and so on. Obviously, it's gone far from that. Especially in the 10 or so years since it was decriminalized, but they're working really hard to bring it back.
I want to hear another cut from one of your audios. This is Bill and Tina Hodge. Where were they, by the way, in what part of rural California?
They're as far northeast about as you can go in the state. They look over, when you sit on their hill, you look over into Nevada, and they're about three towns down from the border with Oregon. They're in the South Warner Wilderness. They have this unique homestead within that wilderness, so their neighbors are coyotes and bears.
Well, also birds. They help rescue injured birds and other animals. This is Mata County, and in this clip, we're going to hear Tina discussing a sort of interspecies understanding they've arrived at with the animals they work with. It's pretty fascinating.
Eagles have taught us about wind. I would never have understood wind without taking an eagle out to build its muscles up so it could fly again after it healed. It's a big process called creancing. It's a falconer's technique, and it's really tough work. You have to put all this equipment on them and tie them to a long line and then throw them into the air and force them to fly and then catch them and do it again and catch them and do it again. It's a workout for you and the birds. And then you start like 3 days a week, then four, then pretty soon you're doing it every day, and then you let them go free.
There again is that sense of ritual, but boy, just people working with eagles up there. I mean, not something you're apt to find in the urban environment. Here's a listener who writes, historian Colin Woodward believes there are effectively 11 different nations in North America, and Northern California he splits in two, the coastal counties, which along with coastal Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia make up what he calls the Left Coast, while inland Northern California is part of the greater Far West. Left Coast has much of the individualism of the Far West, but received an added touch of New Englanders who brought us their idealism, utopianism even. Inland California does not have that. Some of these differences are not rural-urban per se, but are due to the culture of those that first settled there. That's from Tim in Berkeley. John Christensen.
Yeah, well, I think we can divide and divide and divide as far as we want. I mean, even West Marin is different from the rest of Marin and the rest of the Bay Area if you want to continue to, kind of parse many of these differences. there's 5 million rural Californians. That's 1 in 7 of us. That's a pretty big number and a pretty diverse group. And they're part of, I think, they're part of us. I think we should know each other.
Here's Gloria joining us from San Jose. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, actually it's Lori. Grew up in San Jose here, but for the last 20 years I was living in San Martin near Gilroy. And believe it or not, the area that I lived in, there were 3-acre parcels and it was called rural residential. And I'm loving your show, but you really, believe it or not, that area down there is still, there's still farmers that make a living off of farming. There's a lot of rural activity and it really is, it's considered a bedroom community. It is a different world, and I think that one of the things that I notice, I just moved out with my folks. I'm in my 50s, and I'm living with my 70-year-old parents in the home that I grew up in West San Jose. One of the differences that I see, let's say, with the two Californians is people in this neighborhood, they don't notice doves. They don't know what a crow is. And there's things that after living in a country environment, because it was very country, I was on 3 acres surrounded by acreage. My next neighbor was half an acre away. You feel the seasons, and you do have, you burn fires, and you notice nests. And I miss that very much, but I'm also recreating it here in West San Jose. And it's really a tremendous cultural change for me, even though I grew up here. But anyways, I'll take my, I'd like to go off and hear your comments.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Gloria.
I think that's a beautiful, evocation of how we're, in a sense, I mean, returning to or recreating or creating anew a kind of continuum. That in the what we might call the suburbs of San Jose, there's an attention to the production of food, the wildlife that surrounds us, and I think this is a big part of that attention to where our food comes from, how nature supports us, that Roots of Change, one of the supporters of this project, is very deeply involved in.
A lot of it is food and comes back to food and the whole food structure, but a lot of people just want to get back to nature. They want to breathe freer or breathe better air or whatever. I mean, you don't have to go that far from San Jose. She mentioned Gilroy, for example, and you're in garlic country, and, you know, you've got farmers all around you, and it's really quite agrarian in many ways. And not that far from San Jose. Let me go to more of your calls. We'll go to Cupertino. Dolores, good morning.
Hi. Mr. Krasny, I appreciate your great coach of discussion. I lived here 20 years, came from, grew up on a farm in the Midwest. And we've had over 80 visitors who've come 20 times sometimes. And they love to tour California. And I think the value to urban folk in California is the rural of California. And everybody loves to explore the urban area. I don't know if tourism is a draw that the local want, but it is appreciated from the northern part to the southern part. Every part of California is beautiful, and I hope that the rural know this about the urban folk. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Dolores. And I want to read some more of your comments. This is from Jeanette, who on her subject line says, small town girl goes to the city. She said, I grew up in the town of Greenfield in the Salinas Valley. I now live in San Francisco. As a child, I chafed against the small community, the fact everyone knew everybody else. They used to call that Peyton Place, right? I craved anonymity. Now, as a mother of two small children, I miss the sense of closeness, the safety of the village. And though my children will have many opportunities that I only dreamed of, I mourn the many facets of rural life they will miss. A comment on the web, the great divide that I see existing between rural and urban California, as exists in all states, is rural people feeling that urban folks wanting to dictate how country people should live their lives. Whether this is done through laws, jokes, or the need to explain them has always been a bone of contention that will most likely always exist. And Stanton says, Ferndale does sit in the middle of the Eel River dairy realm, but it's also a chock-a-block with art galleries and bed and breakfast inns. It's rural in a very particular way. A listener in Berkeley, Helen, says, the most ignored minority? Perhaps so, based on what my friends from rural communities have told me and what I've read. Although she says, you want racism in this country, it's still Native Americans who suffer a great deal. I mean, we're talking about not necessarily prejudice in that sense when we talk about prejudice toward rural Americans, even if it's, you know, looking at them as bumpkins or whatever. Ted says, beautiful images on Lisa's website. Thank you. Community-supported agriculture like Full Belly Farm. Thank you, too. Discord between California farming towns and villages and California coastal centers is like tribal envy and fear. Unfortunate. Here's Clara, who says, I grew up in Humboldt County, up in the coastal mountains. Consider rural even for the area. I loved every moment of it. Growing up rurally taught me appreciation of our planet and our resources that I don't believe I would have if I had grown up in the city. However, as much as I enjoyed living in the country, I went to college in the Bay Area. I wanted to know what the wider world was like. What I learned in the city was an acceptance for diversity that I never saw in the small towns I knew. This point was hammered home the last time I visited Humboldt. I was visiting with my adopted African-American son. Everywhere we went, he and I got strange looks from people and were even glared at when we were out shopping. Few people made negative comments about his adoption. I was shocked. This place that I loved and was nurtured in was having a hard time accepting my son. So while I will always have a deep love for my small community and what it taught me, I hope that raising my son in the city will help him accept those who are different. And we'll go to another caller here, and that's you, Timothy. Good morning.
Yes, Michael. I wanted to ask get an opinion from your guests regarding the display of their artwork that they produced about rural California in the BART facilities. Certain parts of the country, train and bus stations are having difficulty getting their art displayed because they don't fit an approved narrative, if you will. Sort of as George Orwell wrote, there's the Ministry of Truth in various parts of the country that it seems only has approved art displayed. Is that their experience?
No, BART was welcomed us with open arms. We just had to pay for the space, but there were no questions asked, though it's interesting. We investigated doing this same thing on transit in Los Angeles, and the process is very different, and that's one of the reasons.
Open arms, but not free arms.
Not free arms by any means. Thanks to the Creative Work Fund, we were able to do it, but no resistance there from BART.
But these are also, I mean, I think what you see on these posters is this is not these are not polemical statements. They're intriguing openings They don't close any kind of conversation. They open it up.
Yeah, and it was important to us throughout this process of designing the BART ads and conceptualizing them to not have a message. You'll notice that we're not trying to sell anything. We're not trying to say that anything is good or bad. We're just presenting lives and stories, and it's hard to argue with that.
Who are the since I've had a chance to look at your work, your photographic work, and others will be looking at your website again is just realrural.org. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are the photographers who've had major influences on you?
Well, there have been a lot that I've looked at over the years in starting to photograph the rural West several years ago.
I was thinking Dorothea Lange. Is she?
Certainly, but I think a more contemporary influence is Richard Avedon with his series, The American West, which, of course, as you know, was a shock when it came out because it was a portrait of the rural West, but not of the more photogenic or more known people. It was the people at the periphery who actually make up the structure of the West, the people who are actually out there working. And that's where my work on rural communities began.
And you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Lisa Hamilton and John Christensen. This is a fundraising period for this radio station, KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to more of your calls. We'll go to Corey next. Corey, join us. Hi.
Hi. I was struck by what your dairy farmer said in that city people may not have the kind of community that country people have, and seeing that in the communities I have around me, that there are those things, that they were cultivated, and in a lot of cases, partly because rural people were meeting city people. Like Renaissance Fair has been going for 40 years, and it's usually taking place in rural areas, and it mixes rich, poor, rural, city, everything. And those people take care of each other's kids. Somebody's in the hospital, everyone chips in. Somebody's house falls down in a storm, people come in and help build it, you know, all kinds of things like that that you would see in rural communities go on in the cities. And that's also gone into Burning Man, which has a lot of the Renaissance Fair people. It has a lot of other people from tech backgrounds who have a can-do-it and make it thing with technical things. But the Burning Man crowd also, when Katrina came, loaded up a bunch of trucks with tents, supplies, everything, went out to New Orleans and were there for a lot of the emergency crews because they have that same ethic. But it's something that city people have had to cultivate, where I think in a rural small town environment, which I have lived in as well, you depend on that, and that's sort of the background noise of the town.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. Go ahead, Lisa Hamilton.
I think you touch on an interesting point, which is that there's this sort of fiction about rural America, rural California, that they have a monopoly on things like community and morality. I've written that we have this belief, you know, perpetuated through, 50 years of country songs that rural places are where our collective soul resides, and that there's something inherently meaningful living there. And in fact, a lot of the good things that exist in rural places exist in urban places too. What this project is about, what Real Rural is about, is looking beyond that fiction and instead meeting the people who are actually in rural California and seeing the diversity and the depth of experience there, both good and bad.
And we thank Corey for the call. Here's a web comment from a listener who writes, I've seen stereotypical rural things in Central California alongside some amazing cultural things. I participated in the Japanese tradition of mochitsuku, mochi pounding. It's a tradition dying out in Japan due to the lack of open spaces, but survives in Japanese farming communities in Central California. And this fascinating cultural experience was nicely juxtaposed with playing touch football with a boy named Waco in full cowboy regalia, boots and the big hat and everything. I'd say the Central Valley is a lot like Texas with a California twist. Pierre writes, from personal experience, I find the modern websites too dense with data to be useful for the narrow pipes available in farms and ranches, leaving the only satisfying information to the commercial broadcast, sprinkled with a few public stations. This makes most of the web experience quite penurious and, in my opinion, contributes to the divergence of the two societies. And Michael says, Lisa, if a rural person was to ask you what you most hope urban people will gain from your BART campaign and website, what would it be?
You know, I don't have any grand idea that this is going to somehow change things in Sacramento or, you know, begin a sea change in the state of California. What I'm hoping is that there are small changes on the ground level in the minds of individuals. You're sitting on BART, you look across you from you and see Dennis Lenardi, or you see Sebastian, the 11-year-old boxer from Thermal, California, and you begin to feel a human connection with these people who normally feel so far away, and realize that they're humans too, that you have a lot more in common than you thought.
One more call here, Nancy from Campbell. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to just put out something I've noticed, that there seems to be a pattern of the really poor people moving out of the cities to smaller rural towns where they can find Section 8 housing. And I noticed this working as a social worker in San Jose and having families moving out to Los Baños, where there was a lot of new housing built that people from San Jose bought for investments and couldn't rent out and ended up renting it out under the Section 8 program.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Nancy. I think that's something we have to continue to watch. And speaking of watch, you'll want to, not necessarily watch, but look at certainly the photographs on the website realrural.org, or just go on BART, look on BART, and you'll see them. Or go to our website, kqed.org. And we remind you, you can continue this discussion by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment and keep the discussion going about the two Californias, rural and urban. I want to thank our guests, Lisa Hambleton, again, head of the Project Rural Rural, and John Christensen, head of the Bill Lane Center for the American West at Stanford. Thank you both. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.